This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Konbanwa, kia ora, welcome to the 23rd episode of the Dunedin Otago Sister City Society podcast on Otago Access Radio. I'm your host today, Haruko Stewart, a member of the Sister City Society and a Japanese Senior Teaching Fellow of the Languages and Cultures at Otago University. I'm right here with today's awesome guest, Dr. Mami Yamaguchi, a well-being clinical psychologist at Student Health in Otago. We had great fun talking about her upbringing, her family in Japan, her hometown Kumamoto, and so on in our last episode. Today, we're going to take a closer look at Mami's interesting exchange student life, work life, and family life in Dunedin. Mami, welcome back to the show.
Again, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining me again. So, you were an exchange student at Otago Pathway First Language Center?
No.
Polytech.
I wasn't a really exchange student.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right, because I was a resident, permanent resident already. When I started uni.
I see.
And because they actually recognized my university degree from Japan, they gave me cross credits.
Great.
Yeah, so I started, of course, from the first year of psych, you know, undergrad psych, but I didn't need to take all the papers to get, you know, to complete the credits, our points.
Great.
So first year, second year at uni undergrad studies at Otago, I probably had a bit of an easy time, but it was great because, you know, of course, studying overseas, studying at university was, of course, first experience for me. So I was quite nervous to start with, you know, whether I could catch up, you know, keep up with all the studies and assignments and exams, et cetera. But it turned out.
Are you right?
I utilized all the student supports at Otago. So study center. You know, they provided, they still provide all the, you know, workshops to support student study. So like workshops such as how to write essay,
academic writing
sessions. That's right. How to prepare exams So I really utilized their services, and I took part in a lot of workshops and to learn those strategies or techniques and etc. And
That's great. Sorry that I was mixing up your information with other students, other people's information, because you actually were in Japan learning English and to be fluent in English already back in Japan.
No, that wasn't the case.
You're very honest.
So the first time I came to New Zealand, my English was really poor.
Really?
I couldn't even form a simple sentence, So, I went to the language school at Polytech and studied English, but I really felt, you know, I can't really communicate well in English to start with. But I think my personality is such that I just utilized, you know, maximized whatever little English I had at that time.
No. Well, I'm sure your English was, I mean, much better than that. Like,
no, not really. So what really helped me was I really did a lot of course, reading and listening, but reading in particular. Do you know famous five books written by Enid Gryden? That's a British author, and she wrote a lot of children's books called Famous Five series. So there are at least like 40 books.
40 books?
Yeah, and I read all of them.
Great!
And I read those, you know, Narnia books and all the, yeah, like children's books, like series books. And that's, so they were my textbooks.
Mm.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, you know, Enid Blyton's famous five books, they were, I think they are probably written, could be even 100 years ago by now. So their English is pretty, you know, like old fashioned.
Mm.
But they really helped me to
of course.
Really, you know, acquire uh-huh. English here.
Mm. Oh, great. But you were accepted by Otago University to, pursue your master's and PhD.
What happens, I didn't do master's. I uh-huh. skipped master's. So after, so I did undergrad. And uh-huh. from 30 onwards, I got into honors.
Oh, great.
So
yeah.
I did third
and then you
year
can move on to
a
PhD. Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I could skip master's mm-hmm. to jump onto a PhD. Mm-hmm. So
that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to write a lot of essays and you had to, did you have like a laboratory thing for clinical mm-hmm. psychologists
so,
studies?
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. My journey to become a clinical psychologist is slightly different from, you know, kind of other students in that I completed my PhD first
mm.
and that was in I completed it 2010-11 and then, you know, I moved back to Japan with my family and then I worked in Japan for probably 6 years, and then came back
that
to
long.
New Zealand. Yeah, and I came back to New Zealand in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking, well, you know, I was running some, you know, I used to run a lot of seminars and workshops, and also, you know, giving talks in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And I shifted, when we moved back to New Zealand, I mm-hmm. shifted many programs into online program.
Mm.
But it was, you know, pretty hard to continue
mm-hmm.
Because, of course, online is not face-to-face.
Yeah.
And also, the work, my PhD was in the field of positive psychology. So mm-hmm. really looking at things and aspects or factors that make people thrive in their lives.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it's positive psychology. So really kind of looking at people's, you know, focusing on people's resilience and strengths and mm-hmm. positive attributes, you know, mm. and what makes people's lives, you know, worthwhile or, mm. you know, happy ones. But when I was working in Tokyo, you know, running seminars and workshops, I came across quite a few people who are really struggling in terms of, you know, mental health, their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt, wow, I, you know, I don't have the specific knowledge and skills to help those people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I started thinking about clinical psychology even at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And after we came back to New Zealand, I started thinking, well, maybe I'll, you know, if I can, mm-hmm. I'd love to study clinical psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's how I got mm-hmm. back to university again and to do clinical program, 3-year, you know, clinical psych program. Yeah.
Okay. So, so for 6 years when you were in Tokyo.
No, we were in Kumamoto.
Kumamoto. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you belong to like an organization where that you help like mental illness people, or is it more like
no.
a counseling thing? Or
No. That was more like I run my own business.
Oh.
So
well-being.
Yeah.
Business.
Mm-hmm. So I was basically creating my own content in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, seminars and mm-hmm. Psychology programs, and then as you know, I had a few books published in Japan writing about, but it was more like a focused on you know, personal development and personal kind of empowerment programs.
Mm-hmm.
So they are not really you know, clinical psychology work.
Mm. Well, they both help people though.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's good to have, you know, the knowledge and skills to help people, you know, the people who are struggling mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, helping them to come back to kind of, you know, baseline.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, baseline is just baseline, right? So they can, of course, those people can even thrive even more.
Mm-hmm.
So having that, you know, almost like a, yeah, the entirety of human experience, which is not just only, you know, positive and thriving. Sometimes people survive.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to, you know, now having kind of dipped in both fields in a way. So I really, really
enjoy. Well, your knowledge about both help each other, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Mm. Mm. So I've got a few of your books, Mommy.
Okay, thank you.
I love your Daily Dose of Happiness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I would like to ask you a little bit about this book, this mm-hmm. beautiful book. Mm-hmm. It's like a picture book, which I can actually put on a coffee table in front of my sofa with other picture books. And sometimes I can just pick it up and have a look at it because I can see your sister, lovely sister Rumi's photos in that book and your lovely daughter's photos. When you write about one episode, you've got your daughter's photo, and which is really related to what you're writing about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got you and it's got your family. So it really made me like feel so kind of warm in my heart. And it was really helping me to have a nice time. And just by reading it makes me happy. And I think it's a great, what I want to say is it's a great book.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah so it's a beautiful book.
Yeah. The book Daily Dose of Happiness came about because I was writing those, you know, kind of small, really short kind of passage to post on Facebook, you know, so I was combining my sister's photo and which kind of like symbolized what you know, I was writing for each segment.
Mm.
And so I continued, I sort of like posted those posts over probably three and a half or 3 years.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, it would be great if I can, you know, turn this into a book. So that's how the idea came. And just looking back, some of the entries, I think, about my daughter at that time.
Mm.
And she was, you know, still probably like 6-7 years old. And now just rereading some of the you know, entry I wrote, it's almost like dedicated to my daughter in a way.
Well, she will love it. I mean, she must be loving it already, but when she becomes even, you know, mature, I think she can just look at this as a memory with you and with your sister. And it's a very good book,
memorable
book for her, I'm sure. Yeah, and we can learn a lot too, because it looks very casual, yet you are using a lot of knowledge you've got. So it is educational, but it's quite casual in a good sense, so that you don't have to read that book because you're interested in psychology, just about your everyday life, you know, where you do have problems. We do have problems. You can just have a look at and just, you know, check one of the entries. Maybe you can choose the entry that you are actually feeling the same with the entry, what you wrote in each entry. Like for example, when you so many interesting stories and entries were there. So for example, maybe when you fought against your friends or something and you feel a little bit down, you feel guilty, and then okay, this entry is about me, how I feel right now. So you can just pick up the entry and then you can read. So it doesn't have to be like, okay, sit down for 2 hours, 3 hours, and you have to keep reading. You can do that, but you can actually read it every day or sometimes. So like a long-term book that you need to have. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
And promoting.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Haruko. It's, as you said, it's a very, you know, easy book to read.
Yeah.
And it's like a, you know, coffee kind of picture book, coffee photo book in a way. And
yeah.
Very, very short. You know, probably I shouldn't call it even essay. It's a very, very short entry for, you know, for each one.
Uh-huh.
And, those are the kind of micro moments, you know, very, very kind of ordinary experiences we have throughout our days.
Yeah.
And writing really helped me to make note of that, you know, notice those moments.
Mm.
And so, you know, all the writing I've done so far, really, I feel like I did writing. I wrote those things. For myself.
That's
know?
Right. That's how I felt.
Mm.
It's good for herself and for readers.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And like I said, I mean, you don't have to be seriously reading it. You can just have it and put it on a coffee table. And I'm doing that actually.
Oh,
yeah. So, okay. Yeah. This entry may be okay. For example, I fought against my hubby or something. No, I'm joking. But basically, you can choose. You know, pick up one of the entries anytime.
Yeah.
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 And you can repeatedly read that too.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. It's a beautiful, beautiful photo book, picture book.
Oh,
thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, it's on Amazon. I checked it this morning and it's still on Amazon. where did your other books go? I couldn't find them this morning.
Oh, so,
like Azato, you know.
Azato Kawaii.
Yeah, storyful.
And
romance, love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
should keep them all.
I couldn't find
them.
Yeah. I think all the books are there.
Mm.
Some of them are published, you know, by, of course, you know, different publishers.
Mm.
And one of the books, I think, both published in book, you know, like paper format, but also e-book.
Hardcover.
Kindle book version as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but it's, I feel like I wrote them quite a while ago now, so probably, I need to write a new one, but.
Yeah, you should, but they still work,
mm-hmm.
they are valid still,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
thank you.
Really useful.
Thank you.
Yeah, and your husbands have written a lot of books about English teaching, learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As well.
That's right. So William, because he, you know, taught English for so many years to so many people, he's, you know, that's his expertise. And when we were living in Japan, you know, we were getting so many questions about, so how can you acquire English? And so, you know.
It's our forever, like, you know, theme for Japanese English learners.
Yeah. Yeah, so William, that's one of the books was, what was the, I think, English title, I can't remember, but, you know, if you want to master English, just make a lot of mistakes. That's the kind of gist of the
That's really the right.
Book. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that was published by Asahi Shimbun Publisher, and...
It's a major, big publisher,
And another book of his is when we actually traveled, we cycled the lengths of Japan in 2015.
Yeah.
Sorry, 2000. How many years ago now? 2005 even?
Oh my God.
such
20 years ago.
Yeah, long, long time ago. So he wrote a book about it. But then he turned the book into very kind of simple English, and then so that, you know, English learners can read.
Oh, great.
Well. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another book of his.
Oh, that's great. So you two write books, so you really inspire each other.
Yeah.
And maybe share ideas and give advice to each other about each other's books.
Yeah.
Maybe say your feedback, give your feedback.
Yeah, especially William's book about, you know, the book published by Asahi Shimbun Publisher, because I had to translate it, you know.
Oh.
So he wrote it in English.
So the explanation part is written in Japanese.
Yeah. So we sort of worked together.
I mean, Japanese is very good, but yeah, of course, we need to ask our partners who can speak that language to help and do proofreading, of course.
So that was like a joint work.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, we just love, again, both of us love books. But, so sometimes we read the same books, but quite often maybe different ones. But we often, talk about books. And
Well, I really ask you both to write more books. You're very busy with your university work, of course. But but your books, like, you know, those this Daily Dose of Happiness as well. Nothing is old fashioned or anything. You're humble. So you said, oh, maybe I should rewrite kind of a new one, most updated one. But I think it works for even now.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's for your, you know, state of mind, like peaceful state of mind. When I read it, I think I really feel kind of relaxed. So it's a very good one because it's based on your experiences as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real to me.
I think that was like a probably enjoyable part of it. You know, I didn't need to create something out of you know, nothing. It's really based on the daily, you know, experience.
That's right.
Which we have. And nothing is really, you know, extraordinary or unique, but something, by just paying attention, you know, notice something which you may have not noticed before. And
but by noticing that, I mean, maybe your life could be a little richer or
That's right. I think someone said, you know, like something similar, you know, if you can enjoy little things in life, then you'll lead a very, you know, content life.
That's right. And that is the theme of this Daily Dose of Happiness, right? Daily dose. I mean, dose must be really little, but then if it adds up, I mean, every day, then it's a big thing and you feel content. Not just happy, content day.
Yeah. So another thing I often talk, you know, with my clients is called micro moments of regulation. So, you know, throughout the day, we experience those moments where you might feel kind of, you know, peace and, you know, being comforted and relaxed. You know, those moments are actually really important. And by paying attention to those moments, could be, you know, those are micro moments. So, you know, the just like encountering someone on the road and exchanging a bit of, you know, conversations, or drinking your favorite, you know, cup of tea or coffee, or, you know, seeing your spouse's, you know, smile, or you know, hearing jokes, or and to me, for me, really just, you know, really kind of seeing the blue sky, birds, you know, hearing birds chirping, those things are really micro moments of regulation they provide for me. And by paying attention to those moments, so the moments can be just 5 to 10 seconds, pretty short.
Yeah.
But by noticing them and savoring them, and then you can actually extend the time of those micro moments. And that means, you know, you have throughout the day, you have this kind of like a extended, say, like 30 seconds of micro moments of regulation, and they are cumulative, right?
Yeah.
And when you are in a regulated state, your nervous system in regulation, you can't be in a dysregulated state at the same time. So you are really kind of recalibrating and training your nervous system to be in a calm state. So we can actually, you know, we can do so many things to really kind of regulate or recalibrate our mind, our nervous system, so that you feel better. And it doesn't need to be a huge, you know, you don't need to go to this kind of like a yoga retreat or, you know, special retreat, paying a lot of money.
I mean, if you want to, you can, but you don't have to, right?
No, that's right. So there are so many pockets of, you know, those small moments, micro moments, but they provide a lot of good stuff to our psyche.
I mean, well said. I mean, because I love the term micro moments, because those little micro moments can make our macro moments or macro life, the whole life, happier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So little things add up and it becomes actually a longer term. And when you know it, you are actually always content.
Yeah.
That's great. So what do you do as one of your macro moments, like happiness kind of thing? Well, what is it? Well, you are very happy. Always, your mood is really always the same, very calm. To us, you look like that.
Yeah.
But what do you do to make yourself like feel always?
Yeah. So I have to say, you know, I'm a human being.
Yeah,
so my feelings change, my mood changes. Yeah, what I do on a daily basis is the first thing in the morning, I do meditation for 15 minutes, and then followed by writing a bit of journal, a bit of journaling there, and also through in the afternoon, if I've got the time, I try to do a bit of meditation, having a quiet time in my office, which is unfortunately I can't do that every day.
I know.
But if I can, I try to do that.
Is it like a Buddhist way of meditating or your way?
Probably it's just my way. I don't really follow any kind of meditation method or guided meditation or anything. But I try to keep a word, a certain word. Could be anything. But I use something as an anchor to try to bring my mind back to the anchor. And I don't worry about my mind, wandering around during meditation, because that's what minds do. But as soon as I notice my mind kind of starts wandering and then going to that kind of different tangent of different topics, then I just gently bring my attention back to the anchor. So it's really the purpose of meditation for me is not really get rid of our thoughts or completely have a quiet, very, very quiet, moment. But just like having my body completely relaxed because, of course, I'm sitting quietly and my eyes closed. So I'm telling my nervous system that I'm completely safe.
That's very important.
Yeah, so the body can get into this total relaxation, and that's more the point of meditation for me. And if I can, have a quiet mind, some space between my thoughts, that's a bonus. But that's not the real point. But because we are so busy every day, if we don't really, allocate a certain time like this, then we never have a quiet moment to ourselves. So. And I think we really need that, having that very quiet, total moment to ourselves.
Yeah.
You are not, rushing. You are not thinking about, I need to do this, in a constant kind of motion. I think that's probably the beauty of, meditation and mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
But it's a practice. So, I try to be consistent about it.
Journaling is like that too, right? Because, it's been little popular, very popular in Japan as well and internationally as well, I hear. And journaling and keeping a diary could be a little bit different. Journaling, like you said, while you were doing meditation, your thoughts are everywhere and wandering. That's okay as long as you get back to the anchor. So journaling as well, you can write anything that comes in your mind, right?
Yeah, that's right. So journaling is, again, having a bit of pause and reflective moment, because you are when you write the journal, you are reflecting on your life. Mm-hmm. But another thing I really find it helpful mm-hmm. is called expressive writing. Mm. So, you know, when we experience some strong emotions, mm-hmm. which...
Good or bad, doesn't matter.
Yeah, mm. yeah. And especially when they are so-called like a negative, you know, emotions such mm-hmm. as, you know, anger or jealousy or shame and mm. sadness. You know, sometimes it's hard to express that to others, right? Mm. And because, you know, you don't want to make it a big deal or mm. you don't want to, you know, turn it into a conflict or... Mm. But, you know, those emotions need to be expressed.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So expressive writing is where you set a timer, maybe 15 to 20 minutes, and then you just let whatever emotions and thoughts, you know, which are kind of going around in your mind and mm-hmm. in your head, just let them come out on paper. Mm. So you don't do, you know, no self-censorship. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, you write everything without criticism, without judgment. Mm-hmm. And if there's a, you know, concern about, but what if someone finds this writing of mine mm. and then they might think, wow, you know, she's such a such a bad-mouthing, bad person. Then I just tell my clients, just destroy as soon as you write. Mm-hmm. Because expressive writing is not for, you know, keeping record.
No.
It's a bit different from journaling, so mm-hmm. you don't really need to keep it. Mm-hmm. So you can just destroy it as soon as you finish writing, but you are giving this, you are giving yourself permission mm. to really feel, express mm. what you are feeling.
Mm.
That's the key to mm. really process, again, you know, process our emotions.
Right. So it's like unwanted stuff that you have in your home, like you can just throw them away. So you mm. can just, you know, anything that comes into your mind, you just write them all on the sheet. But then it's like, you know, throwing away rubbish. You can mm. just throw away into a rubbish bin
yeah.
and just forget about it. But mm-hmm. the fact that you've done it mm. means a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. To cleanse yourself.
That's right.
Inner.
Because, yeah, yeah. Because you are listening to yourself. You are listening to your part uh-huh. and you are giving your part a permission to express itself, right?
Mm.
So... The problem comes, you know, with kind of regulation, emotional regulation, is really when you try to stuff it down.
Mm.
You know, that's where the problem arises. So mm. yeah, we do the opposite. So, you know, really thinking about when we see a young child who is upset for mm-hmm. whatever reasons, if you say to them, just calm down. Mm. Just forget it, you mm. know. Or if you try to distract them, hey, you know, there's a toy, an ice cream here. You don't need to be feeling so sad or angry. It doesn't really, you know, mm. it doesn't really solve things. But mm. if you go to the child and say, hey, I see you. Mm. You're upset. It looks like you are feeling sad or mm. angry. And it's okay because we are meant to feel those feelings.
Yeah.
So you just feel it as long as you need to because I'm here. You are not alone. And oh. we'll get through this together. Right?
Yeah. It's really hard. Well, I mean, I've never raised any kids, so I can't mm. say this, but mothers, fathers are so busy with their lives. Mm. And I think a lot of them want to do that. They yeah. know they have to, but mm. Just to kind of finish everything quickly and move on to the next
yeah.
thing that they have
yeah.
to do,
yeah.
kind of, oh, just be quiet. And mm. it's not good for other people, so you have to be quiet, but
mm.
maybe that kid wanted to express something. It's
yeah.
not like to bother other people.
Yeah, 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 that's right. And as soon as you do that
yeah.
with the child, mm. the child is fine, you
mm.
know, because as soon as their emotions, they feel they are seen,
mm.
heard, and understood,
mm-hmm.
then they can just, you know,
Just move on.
Yeah. Then that's it. You know, that's the whole point of, you know, them really struggling with their emotions, right?
Mm.
So the same thing applies to adults as well.
Mm.
You know, we need to be seen, heard, and understood. And the beauty of being adult is we can give that to ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily
kids need
others. Kids need
you, like mothers or friends or, well, basically parents, most importantly, right?
Yeah. And, of course, you know, as adults, it's lovely when we have some, you know, some other people who can provide us with that, you know, that kind of... We call it like a co-regulation.
Mm.
But if we rely on others every single time to be soothed, to be comforted, to be validated, then because others can't do that, you know, every single time because they've got their own lives too and they've got their...
they have to look after themselves.
That's right. So if you rely on others totally, then others... start feeling resentful, you know, understandably.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, we really need to learn and develop skills to be able to do that for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very sort of compassionate approach, you know. Instead of pushing, you know, part of us feeling whatever feelings, you know, that the part is going through, instead of pushing it away, we are really, you know, moving towards it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then really, really saying, hey, it's totally okay. It's totally okay to feel that because, you know, I get it.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's the kind of skill you really, really want to have inside.
Mm. So that's what you've been doing as your approach to your clients as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very... compassionate, sort of like a curiosity-based approach. Because, you know, people come quite often, people come to therapy and really kind of wanting to fix something, wanting to change something, and, you know, certain behaviors could be addiction or could be, you know, some... eating, disordered eating, or could be, you know, drinking it, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, those behaviors are not the problem, per se. Those behaviors are like a coping strategies and coping mechanism, right?
Mm.
So, you know, those behaviors were, when they started arising in individuals, they were often adaptive, you know. But what happens is, you know, we often develop certain strategies, coping mechanism as a child. So when we feel strong emotions as a child, because of the, you know, brain development and its stage, developmental stage, children don't have any capacity to regulate their emotions.
Mm.
So they really need a tuned caregiver with fully developed, you know, prefrontal cortex to come in and then co-regulate them, you know, help them regulate their emotions. But unfortunately, many of us don't experience enough co-regulation as a child. So, you know, with emotions which we can't do anything, then we, you know, as a child, we can't run away, we can't fight. So the only thing left to us is really kind of tune out, you know, tuning out, zoning out, or completely kind of distracting ourselves by some, you know, some sort of behaviors. And they were actually adaptive. You know, when we are a child, that's how we survive, you know, the kind of unbearable experiences. But when once we've grown, we become adult, then the situation is, of course, completely different. We have much, you know, because we develop, you know, certain capacity and both internal and external resources. So, you know, the state is very, very different. But the old adaptive mechanism, they keep on going. So those old adaptive mechanism turn into maladaptive mechanisms.
Oh, wow. Right?
So that they become a problem, right?
Yeah.
So that's the, but yeah, so that's again, that's awareness we need to have So now to shift this maladaptive mechanism, mm-hmm. we can't just say to ourselves, just stop it. Mm. Just say no or just stop it. Because those are the mechanisms which protected us, you know, when we are young. Mm-hmm. So those parts are protectors inside our mind. So they protectors also need to be treated with respect and compassion. Mm-hmm. And we need to approach go to them and then say, hey, I see you. You are working so hard mm-hmm. to protect me. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm not a child anymore. Mm. You know, I'm a grown adult now. Mm-hmm. So I can actually handle much more than I used to be able to. Mm. And so you really need to show up and you need to show your capability. But again, that's a practice, right? Mm. So... so that's the kind of, and also we have very much, you know, wounded parts inside of us, you know.
It could be like trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. So trauma is an interesting thing because trauma, you know, people often think like trauma is like capital T trauma, such as abuse or neglect. Mm-hmm. But even like we experience so-called like small T trauma, which are very common experiences, such as being misattuned emotionally, being misunderstood by others, being maybe pushed away or being ostracized by our peers. You know, those things can be very, very painful to our younger selves. Mm. And so we get wounded, you know, as a child and or even adolescents, of course. And so we have many kind of wounded parts inside, which are still, you know, unhealed. Mm. So, and as long as we have those unhealed parts, then, of course, protective parts work really hard. Mm. So ultimately, the healing needs to happen. But also, you know, developing really trusting relationship with our protectors, you know, which people call it like, you know, defenses or coping mechanisms, is also very important. Mm. So, yeah, therapy is not easy.
No.
Therapy is not something you instantly feel better. Mm. So I often say to my clients, you know, my job is to not to make you feel better immediately, but make you become good at feeling and noticing and regulating yourself. Yeah. So that's a journey, right?
Mm, it is.
Yeah.
And it must be so rewarding when you see someone who hasn't recovered because like you've been saying, it's not a physical illness. So mental illness is very hard to say, okay, she's recovered fully. Mm. I mean, okay, maybe for a moment you might feel she has, but after that, maybe it again comes up or in a different way or in a different shape, but at least, okay, she can handle this. Mm-hmm. So to reach that stage, you must feel it's so rewarding.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's good for that person himself as well.
Yeah. So it's really totally, you know, this is like a personal development and we've got to do this, you know, practice this, until, you know, I mean, until we die.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, as you said, there are so many things probably we experience and so many changes, you know, we experience. We are not static, right? So we continue to grow and with growing and, you know, aging and, you know, our health changes, our physical state will change.
Yes.
And, so I think there's no really end to our work within.
No.
It just continues to happen throughout our life. And but that's the kind of, I see it, that's the fun of it, you know?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard job, but you do have a passion for that. You love this job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Did you notice, I'm sure you did, like differences? Okay, we call them mental illness, but I'm sure 10 years ago, ago, 20 years ago, when you had clients, and now maybe people have changed, problems have changed. Are there any dramatic or even small, minute differences between that time, like 10 years ago, and now? Do you see something a little different among clients?
Yeah, the thing is, I can't really speak to that because, you know, the work as a clinical psychologist, still I haven't got 5-year mark yet, you know? So I don't know about what was happening in this field 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But even for the past, you know,
since
I started working as a clinical psychologist, certainly, I think people are becoming more aware of, you know, about mental health.
Yeah.
And it's great that young people are more willing to, you know, come to therapy and engage. So I think with greater awareness, they don't necessarily wait until the completely like a breaking point. So, you know, some students come and then they say, well, I'm not super, super struggling at the moment, but, you know, started sensing a bit of, you know, difficulties or challenges. So, you know, they thought it's good to come earlier than waiting too long.
Yeah.
So that's really great. And also, you know, young people are very much aware of, you know, this generational kind of like a gap, and also maybe kind of transgenerational legacy that, you know, they are, some of them are aware of what sort of things are passed down from generation to generation. You know, they are aware of their parents, for example, their parents' upbringing and how difficult that was and how that impacted their parents and their way of parenting. Yeah, I think it's really great that, you know, young people are more open and they have, you know, great awareness, and I feel so privileged to work with my clients.
Yeah.
So I say to, you know, especially young, students, I say, this is so great. You know, you are still this young and then you are getting this understanding and knowledge and
at
skills.
At an early stage.
Yeah. So I have so much hope for the young generation because they are the ones who, you know, of course, who might become parents one day and have family and then they're going to pass on, you know, their experiences and their, you know, internal learning. And so I just have so much hope. For the younger generation.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because in my generation, if I say, for example, oh, I've got this problem, I mean, I wouldn't be actually treated well. I mean, mental illnesses were treated not really in a good way a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
Something that you have to feel ashamed of, something that you have to hide, and maybe parents, I mean, not my parents, parents in general, parents would be very ashamed of having a kid who has got an, you know, mental illness. Yeah. But these days, my students come to me to just honestly, just nicely tell me that, oh, hey, I've got this, and so I might not be able to come, and genuinely, I can feel he or she has got that, and I just feel for them, and I accept it, and I want to show as much support as possible. But before, like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when they didn't or they couldn't tell me about what's going on, what was going on with them, it was hard for me to even kind of try to help because they're adults. I know some of them just graduated from high school, so they've got still kind of teenage thing and adult thing and not fully grown up, but still they are adults. I mean, university students are. So I can't really go too much like into their, you know, personal lives. So it was hard, but now they do tell me, so it's great. I mean, I'm sad that they've got this problem, but like you said, we all have, you know, more or less mental problems.
Mm.
So it's good to actually show it, and then we can actually try to support them, help them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think university is, in that way, it's really sort of like increasing the ways to support students. Mm. So now mental health hub is there at the hub. Mm. And, people, students are very much encouraged to seek support.
Yeah. In our departments as well, actually, I've got a role of undergraduate mentor.
Mm.
Yeah. So I send my messages to all the language students, not just for Japanese, but for all the languages. Just ask our administrator to send my message to them to say, hey, I'm here. Mm. I mean, they go to maybe their teachers because they don't know me, but some of them don't know me. But still, good to know that somebody else is there, maybe because they're maybe close to their lecturers, maybe they want to go to another person who doesn't know a lot about them. Maybe some people might prefer that.
Mm.
So anyway, it's good to have a lot more, not just one person, one adult. The more people, adults, they have for support, the better, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So they can go to different people for different problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, on a positive note, I want to kind of end this episode with your everyday kind of things, like what you do, like for... You love Dunedin, right?
Yeah.
So we both are immigrants here. And what do you enjoy about Dunedin life?
Yeah, I guess...
Well, this is related to our micro happiness.
Yeah.
What we do in Dunedin.
Dunedin is such a wonderful city. Mm-hmm. It's pretty... we are surrounded by such beautiful nature.
Mm.
The pace of life is very human friendly, I must say.
Yeah.
And of course, sometimes that becomes a source of complaint. For example, like cafes close so early, 2:30 before 3:00. And
yes, I need a cafe to be open at 3:00. That's right. That's our tea time. But
But coming from Japan, where many shops are open like 24/7, and there's almost like a no time for the city to quiet down. So, here in Dunedin, I think the pace of, life is just so, so nice, and of course it depends on work, I guess, but, in my work, we know for sure, what time we are finishing, and then we can leave at work and then coming home.
Yeah, very hard to do that in Japan in any jobs.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
9:00, 5:00, that's it. No.
Yeah, so that's really great. Mm. And Dunedin is, because maybe university is a kind of, the huge part of this, Dunedin city.
Yeah.
And there are so many, museums and art galleries and all the different interesting events throughout the year. Science festival and fringe festival and film festivals.
Oh,
and,
I love them.
So it's really, in that way, it's really great. I think Dunedin is a good city to raise kids as well.
For the population of 120,000, is it?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, we are doing well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a lot of events to join and...
And it's easy to go around within city, and now of course the cycling path along the just around the harbor is so beautiful to cycle. I like Dunedin.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's why you've been here, like, for how many years?
So probably altogether just maybe over 20 years, because we went back to Japan and lived there about 6 years, so there's a bit of gap in your Dunedin life, but Yeah, we've been here long enough.
Yeah, and you will continue to live here for a while at least.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't know in a good way what will happen in the future, but I mean, we are very happy to be here, right?
Yeah.
Great. Well, some people might be thinking about immigrating to Dunedin, New Zealand. So it's a great place.
Yeah. A bit cold, but...
That's right.
Yeah.
Now it's very cold, yeah. But still, we've got a beautiful summer, which is not too hot and humid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, you know, Mommy, two episodes are not enough. We need more time to talk about your fascinating, you know, journeys, adventures. Your life itself is such an exciting and inspiring, very interesting life. Thank you for sharing a lot of stories about what you've been doing and everything with us. I will invite you again to talk about other things.
Sure. So, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been
such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much. So thank you, everyone. So 最後までお聞きくださりありがとうございました。またね。または。See you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.